Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show. We are in the South Bay, and what a lovely place it is. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that. Today is February 16th, 2017. Thank you for joining us.
The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For additional information, visit their website at academyofforeignlanguages.com, that's all spelled out, or call 310-975-4133.
I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose. That's what we talk about here on The South Bay Show. And, of course, I'm not alone because of our great partnership with South Bay by Jackie.com and producer of The South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great this morning, Joe. How are you?
Okay, good. You have a little frog in your throat, I guess, huh?
Yeah, just a little bit, just a little bit. You know me, my mornings. I am looking forward to the weekend. Never mind the 3.5 inches of rain that's supposed to be coming tomorrow. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, it's really crazy. They are believing it's going to all happen in a 24 to 36 hour period. Like Saturday's not going to be that wet in the afternoon, they say.
Well, that's what they say, but we know better. We know better than to believe is what they say. Yeah, but I don't know if you received my weekend guide yet. It went out this morning. There are some fun events going on this weekend, and I'm just going to say one word: wolves.
Okay.
Wolves. Did you hear that? Wolves. Wolves.
Wolves.
In the South Bay this weekend. Real wolves.
Ow! Yes, wolves.
Yes.
Ow.
That kind of wolf, yeah. Yeah, so.
That's all we need.
And later today, I'm going to the grand opening of Los Angeles Ale Works in Hawthorne.
Oh, yes. That's exciting.
Yeah,
another
brewery.
I've been by there several times. Right.
Yeah.
Another one.
So, it's going to be a busy weekend.
Fantastic. I've had a very, very busy week. Yesterday was my very first day at the Hermosa Farmers Market on Pier Plaza. And it was an amazing experience. And my son was with me. You can't ask for better. It was wonderful.
Oh, how did it go? Did you sell out?
We did not sell out, which is a good thing because we have to get prepared for Saturday. But it was very lightly attended, yet we made money. So I'm counting it as a roaring success for the first day being there.
That's exciting. That's exciting. As a matter of fact, there's something I wanted to mention to you, another event. I just got the information yesterday. Have you heard about South Bay Food Swap?
No.
Okay, this is interesting. This is very interesting. This is, I think it's the beginning of March. I just posted it last night. This is a group of food growers, makers, canners, bakers, Anything to do with food, you just have to create it yourself. And what they do is they bring all these people together and they bring their product and you swap. There's no cash exchanged. So if I bring in a jar of honey, I can swap my jar of honey for your 10 ears of corn or for your biscuits or for your wheatgrass.
What a great idea. Bartering for food. I think that's great. That's really great. Wow.
It's craft. It's artisanal. You know, they're makers, you know. They're not, you know, they're not just you know what I mean? It's I mean, and it's across the board. You know, there's sweets, there's drinks, there's herbs, but as I said, it has to be your creation. So anyway, I'll let you know about that as we get closer to it, because you could go. I can't go because I don't make anything. So
okay. You have to be a producer. Well,
yes, exactly.
I'm excited. The future is bright for farmers markets for us, and also I'll have to tell you there were a number of stories that we heard, my son and I. It's a very human activity to talk about food, to touch and smell and taste food. It's very fundamental. Old people, young people, children, babies, toddlers, they all understand what we're doing, and everyone enjoys it. It was great. What a great experience. But storytelling is fundamental to being human, isn't it?
It certainly is.
And we have someone, if only, Jackie, we knew someone that knew a little bit about storytelling. I would love to have someone like that on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we could do that, Jackie?
I think we could. Our guests this morning are Dylan Brody, humorist and storyteller, and Jim Mueller, producer of the South Bay Story Show. Now, Jim is an Albuquerque to Rochester to SoCal transplant living in Redondo Beach and is a writer, producer, and actor of great variety. He produced the first South Bay Story Show in October 2015. Jim produced and starred in a Hermosa Beach production of the award-winning play The Gin Game. He wrote, produced, and acted in the short film Everybody Says Goodbye and the award-winning feature film DeWitt and Maria. Jim enjoys producing, directing, and performing with the Movers and the Shakers out of Santa Monica College and many others. He has also performed at Shine, the Santa Monica storytelling show. His story, The Kiss, was chosen as Shine's Best of Show. Now, with fans that include comedic legends such as Carl Reiner, Robin Williams, Roseanne Barr, and Paul Krasner, and an ever-expanding repertoire of witty and profound tales of his journey through life that are unique yet utterly recognizable to everyone, Dylan Brody has earned a reputation as one of America's leading storytellers. He currently writes and performs regularly for The David Feldman Show in Los Angeles, The Drive with Steve Jackson on KSRO, and is a regular contributor.
Well, I think we've lost Jackie. She'll be right back with us. Dylan and Jim, I want to thank you and welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
So I'm going to start with you, Jim. There is something truly fundamental about storytelling, but beyond that, when there is news in the land, when there are that old Chinese curse, when we live in interesting times, we tend to talk more. And I think there's a great deal of storytelling going on right now around the country. Do you find that this is just this time is very sort of pregnant with stories?
Oh, yes, definitely. I believe that people now especially want to hear that there is a real world going on with people doing things besides being political. And that's a lot of what the South Bay Stories show is about. All of the stories this time don't involve anything having to do with the politics, but they show that people are living their lives and having experiences that go beyond whatever is happening in the pundit world. So I think storytellings provide a great deal of comfort and enjoyment.
And education. I mean, this is, as I was saying, this is fundamental to who we are as human beings. Tell us a little bit, let's step back a moment, Jim, and tell us a little bit about why you started South Bay Stories.
Well, I fell in love with the idea of storytelling as a theatrical performance. And really, I owe this to L.A. and to people like Dylan Brody. Dylan Brody is such a fascinating storyteller, and he can bring you right into the world, his world, and make you feel it. And many storytellers can do that as well. And so the L.A. scene is rich with this, with these stories going around. And it's interesting when you have a show or a bunch of storytellers in one place and hear the variety of lives that people have led, the variety of experiences, and you hear how they grow through these experiences. I find that very rewarding. It's much, to me, it's much stronger, a much stronger emotional pull than fiction, because when a person is standing right in front of you and telling their own story, there's a power there, an emotional power that I think is very theatrical. So that's why I brought the South Bay Story Show to the South Bay, because there, when I first started, there were no story shows. So I thought people here in the South Bay should be able to enjoy that experience.
And you were saying that it was extremely successful, and there's no doubt about it. You're so generous in thanking us for participating in publicizing it, but the word is out. People are talking to each other, and they know they're going to have a fabulous time. They're going to learn something. They're going to be entertained, and it's just very successful because it's good. That's why it's successful. Dylan, when you think about what you do, what do you call what you do? What label do you put on Dylan Brody?
I'm careful to describe myself as a humorist and storyteller. For years, I was a traveling stand-up comic, as so many of us were in the late 80s, early 90s, and I enjoyed it and I made a living at it, but it ultimately became limiting. And when I redefined myself as a humorist and storyteller and began working in long form, I was freed up enormously to explore bigger ideas and longer, more complex ideas than one can in a simple point-making one-liner.
Right.
So I my business cards say that I'm a purveyor of fine words and phrases.
Right.
For me, it's all about treating public speaking as an experience of literature. I think we've become accustomed to the entertainment industry, and I have said time and again that entertainment is the word people use when they don't want to take responsibility for what they say through their art. And it seems to me that we've become, as a society, accustomed to absorbing art that is thoughtless. We absorb it thoughtlessly, and it is delivered thoughtlessly, with the only intention being to create something that will reach the most possible people and generate the most possible profit. I think art has greater value than that and greater power than that. And that really, when people are listening to stories and to words and to sentences, they are potentially changed by what they hear. That literally epigenetic triggers can be flipped through the proper turn of a phrase, through the sparking of ideas. It's ultimately ancient druid magic, the art of storytelling. And I want to be part of that tradition.
Wow. You've said a lot there. I mean, most people don't think about these things, but there's a very famous Swedish twin study where twins identical twins were followed from almost birth to death, and their health and their IQ and just about everything about their lives was tracked as well as it could be. And the bottom line is, it's not about genetics. You are not determined by your genetics. You are determined by your behavior. Epigenetics is everything. What you eat, what you do, how you move, and also what you think can change your body. And then, of course, there's this movie that's out now called Split, and they talk about split personalities and how the different split personalities have different biological, like, they have different bodies. Is that insane?
Different metabolic rates and so on, yeah.
Right. What the heck is going on when multiple personalities have different metabolic rates, as you say? That's enormously, telling about how we influence our own lives. And so I have to ask you, Dylan, I mean, you know, humorist and storyteller, I mean, that sounds suspiciously like what Mark Twain said about himself.
Well, Mark Twain was slightly less pompous about it than I am. I feel like an idiot saying this, but it follows conversationally, and so I feel I must. I've been compared to Mark Twain, which does not offend me. I like being compared to him, although I don't know that I think of myself in that same vein. I might be. There's a similarity in the burying of social ideas in simple stories that runs through his work and also runs through mine. So there, I can see the comparison happening. My goal always is to do two things at once. The primary visible goal is the entertaining story that absolutely engages and holds an audience and takes them to places other than the room in which they're hearing the story, that sparks their imagination and gets them fully focused and lost in the world I'm creating, the time I'm creating, the events that I'm creating. The second underlying and secret intent is always to provide them with a new way of seeing events in the world and to give them all the pieces of information that they need to make a leap of understanding that they do not see me creating for them, if that makes sense.
Well, we all know, as he has described himself and talked about his own career, Samuel Langhorne Clemens was a dyed-in-the-wool optimist, a dyed-in-the-wool believer in the power and the sort of the power of the human spirit. Is Dylan Brody an alias?
That took a left-hand turn right there at the end to confuse me. No, Dylan Brody is my actual name. My parents named me Dylan after Dylan Thomas because they were fans of the poet. They were hipsters when the only word for it was communist. And Brody was the answer in Russian to some question in English that my great-grandfather didn't understand at Ellis Island. So I get to be a Russian Jew with the most Celtic name in history.
That's great. Fantastic. Well, it the power, Jim, the power of storytelling and the release of this sort of energy today was everyone, you know, very, very, very aware of what a was going on around us. Do you think that the art of storytelling and, of course, what South Bay Stories is growing? Have you heard from other people saying they're forming these kinds of theater shows as well?
Yes, I think they're forming and going away all the time. I did want to say one thing about the story show. Many people who aren't familiar with stories shows at all, when they come to the South Bay Story Show, they don't really know what to expect. But when they leave, they really are changed, as Dylan said. One thing they always say to me, probably the most prevalent thing, is, I don't know where the time went. It's just the 90 minutes seem to just fly by. Then they start talking about their favorite story, and it's very interesting that everybody has a different favorite story. There's not one person, one storyteller that stands out. And so what that tells me is that each storyteller touches the audience in a different way and touches people, different people in a different way. One of the things I've tried to do is get a lot of diversity in the storytellers. And so if you look at our lineup, you'll see men, women, different ethnic backgrounds, different approaches to life. And that's kind of what we're trying to do. And, even serious stories have have a lot of humor in them. You know, it's interesting that human experience, you just can't get away from humor. And that's one of the things that Dylan does so well, is he's able to tell a story with a point and maybe a moral value, but there's so much humor in them.
Jackie, who was your favorite storyteller?
I have to apologize. Skype just kicked me off. No warning.
Yeah.
Yeah, just dropped me off. I'm a reader, Joe, right? I love reading Bill Bryson's books. I've always been a big, big fan of his. And literally, I sit there reading them and I laugh out loud. I love his stories.
For me, it would have been Garrison Keillor in terms of reading, that I just get to a point where I just have to laugh for the last several pages and just laugh for a while because so many things that happen in his stories and in his writing, and then start reading again. And then also,
right,
of course,
Garrison,
in the stand-up.
Garrison Keillor can make a funeral sound funny.
I think he has a few funerals in his stories that are just hilarious. I mean,
yes, right.
Just amazing. And then, of course, I always go back to, because that's my era, I go back to George Carlin. And I think there's something so clear and crystal and almost surgical about what George was able to elicit in terms of his observations. Dylan, you know, that kind of observational humor can develop into a story or can come from a story. It can be a punctuation for a story, and it just drives people insane because it's easy to remember.
That's absolutely right. Part of what George Carlin did so brilliantly was encapsulate a big idea in a few words. And frequently, the observations that we have daily that flit across our minds, he was able to turn into a one-liner like nobody's business. I think part of the reason that that storytelling has taken off in the way that it has, just to piggyback on what Jim was saying a minute ago, is that we have become an enormously populated planet. And there was a time, I grew up in a small town in upstate New York, and I was aware of everybody's story in town. Everybody was aware of everybody else's story. Everybody felt known by their community. And as we populate further and further, and as the population fragments more and more, and this is also due in part to the fragmenting of audience that's come with cable television and then with the interwebs, because it used to be that everyone in America was seeing one of the same three shows every night when there were three channels on television. So even then,
right,
while we were spread out across the vast nation, there was still this sense of communal understanding of how the world works. And now even that has started to dissipate. So what happens with storytelling now is that the people on stage get to feel known for a moment. And this is why The Moth is such a big deal. Some of the amateur and open mic style storytelling events are so big because those people get to feel known for a moment, and the audience gets to feel the satisfaction of sort of knowing a stranger's story or feeling that they do. The nights that are most successful for me as a performer are not the nights that I get the biggest laughs or the longest applause breaks. So make no mistake, I enjoy the laughs and the long applause breaks. The most successful nights for me are the nights that the most people come up to me afterwards and say, I got a story just like the one you just told. And then they tell me a story that is nothing like anything I said on stage. But they have heard in the human experience the sense of belonging. And it leads them to believe that whatever their human experience is valid and deserves to be heard and seen. And that's the real power and the need for storytelling, is that desire and that need to be known.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that 100%. And that's a very interesting point that you make. And one of the reasons that we try to get diversity is to touch all the different people in the audience in some way. And it's amazing.
I hate to interrupt, but I just have to tell you, due to a restraining order, I am no longer allowed to touch all the different people in the audience in a different way.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know.
2 feet distance. 2 feet distance.
That's correct.
In the law. You guys are inspiring me so much that I have to quote the genius. There's so many quotes that are attributed to George Carlin that that aren't his. That the quotes that are his are just that more precious. The one, my favorite, the ultimate, is trying to be happy by accumulating possessions is like trying to satisfy hunger being sandwiches to your body. It has some kind of aesthetic or, I don't know, metaphysical impact and power to me that every time I think of it, it drives me crazy.
That is reducing the accepted convention to the absurd, and it is beautiful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is so beautiful.
George was a tremendously kind man. He was one of my heroes as a child. And if you want to hear a full story about it, there's a recording of me talking at the New York Public Library's tribute to George Carlin from a few years ago, available at YouTube, the YouTubes. But I left a videotape. Remember videotape? I left a videotape for him at a bar that he used to go to with his crew after taping a TV show that he was working on. And I, you know, the cover letter said, "You're a hero of mine. I love your work. I hope you'll enjoy some of mine." And 6 months later, he called me. And it was one of the most satisfying and gratifying moments in my life to that point, that this hero of mine should take the time to call me and say, "I enjoyed your tape." But I was young and stoned and in a depression at that moment. So I said, "Great, would you mind telling the people at Letterman that?" And and he said, "Oh, yeah, let me call you back." And he hung up on me. I called back 20 minutes later to say, "Okay, so I called the people at Letterman. I told them you were a very serious young political comic, and they should take you seriously. I hope that's okay." And that act of generosity, I know so many people who are jealously withholding of any real support or contact information they might have. And for him, for a stranger to make that call and not hold it against me that I was young and stoned and angry at that moment was really extraordinary.
Yeah. Wow.
And his daughter is one of my favorite people in the world.
And he recognized talent, too, so.
Well, there's that.
You know, I did want
to
I did want to mention something about music, because music has been accompanied with storytelling and sometimes accompanies stories. And we do have a fascinating musical storyteller this time. I did want to mention a little bit about that, so if we have time.
Please. Well, now would be a good time. Or actually, Jim, hold on for a second. I'm just going to do a station break, and then we'll tell the story. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the South Bay Show, and we're discussing the most, I would say, the most ancient tradition of any tradition. Yes, even the oldest profession, the most ancient tradition is the telling of stories, and we're celebrating that that most human of qualities with Dylan Brody and Jim Mueller. Jim Mueller from the South Bay Stories Show, and Dylan Brody, the headliner for the latest South Bay Show, which is coming up very, very shortly. The South Bay Stories Show. We're going to talk about all of that, and we'd love to get your comments or questions. If you're listening live and you have some comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. Please give us a call at 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. We'd love to have your comment or question. Now, Jim, music is the second oldest tradition after storytelling.
Yes, and one of the things that I've tried to do with the South Bay Story Show as far as music is concerned is to embed music in a way that treats music as musical storytelling as a sort of co-equal with oral storytelling. And so each one of the shows, I've tried to get an instrument, a person who really knows how to play an instrument that is usually buried somewhere in the orchestra and whose voice you don't hear very often. And so for the last show, I had a clarinetist from UCLA who showed us the voice, or let us hear the voice of the clarinet when it's played by itself. And so this time I've got Corbin Jones, who plays the bass violin, otherwise known as the bass, and he's going to tell us a musical story using the voice of the bass. And I think it should be very interesting if people want to go on YouTube and see just how versatile the bass is. It's much more than a rhythm instrument in backing up other instruments. So I think that'll be interesting as well.
Okay. That's fantastic. And does he actually tell stories as well, or is it just music?
Well, I've asked the musical storytellers not to talk. I'd say talk
okay.
with your music. And I think that seems to work out very well because musicians love to talk about the technical aspects of their music and all that sort of thing. And the music is the most interesting thing, and I want to use the maximum amount of time to let people enjoy the voice of the bass and the musical story.
Right. Right. Fantastic. We're so, there is so much energy in what's going on around the world and certainly here in this country these days. It's an exciting time. I have to tell you, Jim, that I can't tell you how many people that I've talked to that said they're writing a book, they're writing a screenplay, they're writing music. There's an energy in the air reminiscent, some people say, of the 60s when there was really something to fight for. Now, it isn't quite as tremendously, sort of soul-shattering as seeing people dying on TV every day. During the Vietnam War, people forget that the lead, what do they say in news? When it bleeds, it leads. Well, it led every night, and there was a lot of blood. We don't have that going on right now. But do you feel that in the sort of the creative world that there's a lot of creativity going on right now?
Oh, yeah, I think so. And you mentioned things going on around the world. I wanted to have Dylan tell you a little bit about his world tour. He's taking his story show. I think he has a one-man show called Driving Hollywood, and he's taking it around the world. Dylan, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. In 2015 in December, I shot 3 television specials in one night at the David Henry Hwang Theater in downtown L.A. The first of them was Dylan Brody's Driving Hollywood. The second one was The Lost Monologues. And then the third one is a piece called Corner of Starbucks and Christopher Street. That first show, Dylan Brody's Driving Hollywood, was licensed by nextupcomedy.com and is now available there for streaming by subscription. And if your listeners want to use my discount code, BESTMEDICINE, all one word, BESTMEDICINE, they can get, beyond the 30-day free trial, they can get a 20% or 25% discount, I believe, for the first 3 months that they're subscribed. That show deals exclusively with stories of my experiences in the arts. And, in fact, it's the first segment from that show that is the story I'll be presenting at South Bay Stories when I perform there. Now, that show has now been optioned by Blue Panther Productions in San Francisco. And it is being developed as a fully staged theatrical performance, which is to say, I ordinarily, when I perform on my own, stand behind a microphone and tell stories. But we're exploding the text outward into a sort of a Spalding Gray experience with set and lighting and stage movement, all of which I'm trained for. I, as you may or may not know, I trained at the very pompous Royal Academy of Dramatic Art many years ago. So that show will be directed by Nancy Carlin, no relation to George or Kelly, a wonderful director from San Francisco, who is sort of guiding me through the process of really opening up the text into the world of theater. And I'll be going to Chicago in, I believe, May, and then Barcelona in June, and July I wind up back at the Flea in New York for a 2 or 3 week run. And it's tremendously exciting. And I should say, so that my producer does not yell at me, that if anybody wishes to become a sponsor or, more excitingly, an investor in this project, you can go to Dylan Brody's Driving Hollywood, all one word, DylanBrody'sDrivingHollywood.com, to see what's going on and click on the link to take you to how do you contribute, or just call the producer at Blue Panther Productions, Laura Lundy, and talk to her about it, because we are well on our way to having the full budget in place and funded. And we would love to have those last couple of blocks slip into place as soon as possible, because, you know, who wants to be worried about that as we're coming up on a launch date?
Right. Fantastic. Wow.
The idea for me that I get to now take this collection of stories out into the world, and this is the show in which I really get into the questions of art and entertainment and the friction between art and commerce, and the troubling needs of the marketplace as they affect art, and the troubling desire to keep art pure that sometimes prevents it from reaching the widest possible audience, all gets explored through stories of my own vastly disappointing career. I have a career that to anyone outside of LA looks very successful, but I live in LA.
Yeah. And if you don't do 100 million gross a year, you're just a B-list player, right?
That's correct. which is why I spend so much of my time taping sandwiches to my body.
How satisfying. Oh, and you mentioned Spalding Gray. What a study from the 80s and the 90s. Are you from New York, Dylan?
Originally, I am from New York. I've lived in Los Angeles for 30 years now, because
yeah.
It's 3,000 miles away from my family. I grew up on the East Coast. I grew up in upstate New York, but I was aware in adolescence and early adulthood of Spalding Gray and Eric Bogosian at the Public, and some of that solo performance that was going on. What Lily Tomlin was doing at that point was absolutely fantastic, and Whoopi Goldberg's show, of course, on Broadway, the Mike Nichols production that she did. So I was aware of the possibility of solo performance beyond stand-up. I was not yet aware that it was where I was headed.
Right. Fantastic. Well, lots and lots and lots of stuff going on. We're excited that we can participate and make people aware of that. And I don't know. This has been an amazing hour. Hey, Jim? Where did the time go?
I know. It's been fascinating. And I did want to tell people that give the dates of the South Bay Story Show so people would know what to do about it. And it's March 4th at 7:30 in the evening, March 5th at 1:30 in the afternoon. So you can choose your time. I want to suggest there are a lot of great restaurants on Pier Avenue, so before or after, you can enjoy the wonderful things going on in Hermosa Beach, restaurant-wise and also entertainment-wise, in addition to the South Bay Story Show. You know, visit our Facebook page, which is South Bay Story Show, for other information about it. And again,
right.
I really
right.
want to encourage people to come out and enjoy the stories and hear from your friends and neighbors their life experiences.
Yeah, Joe, Jim,
right.
that brings me to this question. The South Bay Story Show, is that strictly because of the geography, or when you started this, was it strictly your friends and neighbors that you got to do this?
Well, the first show was a lot of people that I knew and had met, and the second show expanded out a little bit further because people heard about the show, and there were people sitting in the audience that said they would like to tell their story. So it sort of blossomed out and has expanded. I wanted to call it the South Bay Story Show because I believe that people in the South Bay should have a show of their own, and many of them, as you know, are reluctant to travel east of the 405. So,
yeah.
You know, for a lot of good reasons too, and so that's why I wanted to name it that, and make it
so,
South Bay's own show.
So somebody goes to your show, and they watch it, and they think, wow, this is great, and they come to you, and they say, I've got a story to tell. What is your process? What is your process for choosing the people? As you said, people will come to you. Do you ever have to go out and find people, or do people come to you? And what is your process for choosing them maybe for the next show?
Well, I would say as the third show approaches, most of the people approach me. And I have to say that my process is that we want to help people tell stories in a way that is the most revealing of their story and is going to touch the audience in the most powerful way. So we have a process of helping the person shape the story. I don't try to change the story in any way or, you know, put in facts that I think would be more interesting, quote unquote, but, you know, try to help them shape it. And then my director, Tony Teresi, helps them with their performance techniques and how to perform in front of the audience. One thing that's great about the Second Story Theater in the Hermosa Beach Community Center is that it's a very intimate space. And so people feel like they're, when they get on stage, they feel like they're talking to their friends and neighbors and having a conversation in their living room. And so I think that helps them feel comfortable telling their stories. But at any rate, it works. So
one of the things that most intrigues me about this show, that excites me about doing Jim's show, is the amount of attention and care that I know he puts into helping amateur storytellers really do the background work, the homework that needs to be done for a story to be told well in front of people. I'm a little bit troubled sometimes by some of the shows that I go to where they'll have me in as the guest, and then everybody else has not only never told a story before, but the directors and producers have not looked at the stories, have not listened to them, have no sense of what's going up on the stage, so that you will
have a
person who has no idea how to tell a story or who has no idea what makes a story. In the middle of a show, there will suddenly be somebody who does a 30-minute monologue of disjointed events that occurred over the last week, and believe
right.
because they are talking in front of people that they are telling a story. And this show
right.
has been very clear from the first moment that I started talking to Jim about it, that it works with the newer writers, it rehearses them, it helps them in an editorial way, so that people are given their best possible chance of really expressing their ideas and their stories in a way that will be engaging and engrossing and entertaining and theatrical, rather than just sort of throwing them on stage and letting them sink or swim. There's a real care and love for the storytelling process that I've seen out of Jim that is just tremendously gratifying to see.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
Jackie.
I can see what you're saying. If the performers, the storytellers don't have the proper, somebody doesn't put them on the right course, it just sounds like it could be absolute chaos on stage.
Many of the shows turn into that. Many of the shows that are just starting up and haven't found their way yet can turn into that. And some nights at the Moth turn into that.
So Jim, Dylan, we have a few minutes. Give us, a 2-minute what do you do to really tell a story and capture an audience? How do you make something inside you affect an audience?
Well, first of all, there's the literary process of writing it out and figuring out what all can be lost from it. How bare bones can you get it and have the idea expressed with as few words as possible? And then it's a matter of genuinely standing in the room with the people to whom you are speaking and telling them the story, giving them the words in as measured, in as relaxed, and in as calm a manner as you possibly can. Because ultimately, what you are feeding people when you're working on stage is your confidence. There's a martial arts instructor of mine years ago said, when he asked me how I was, and I said I was a little tired, and he said, "No, never tired. Always I'm great, I feel good. You say you're tired, now I worry about you, you worry about you, everybody a little bit down. Everybody has enough fear, everybody has enough weakness of their own. You share your strength." The real ability to tell a story on stage is all about sharing your strength. And the best way to do that is to reveal your greatest weaknesses without shame, without fear. And when you can stand in the announcement of your own failure, you are sharing your greatest strength, and every member in the audience is able to stand there with you.
So Dylan, do you imagine yourself naked on stage? And does that give you power?
I imagine my wife naked on stage. But that has nothing to do with performing. That's just something that I do sometimes.
Oh, right. Yeah, understood.
It's funny that you asked that. Well, for a long time as a comic, I wanted to find a way to take off all my clothes on stage. I thought that would be hilarious if I could find the right context for it. And then I forgot all about that. And then my first CD, Brevity, which was recorded in a studio, it wasn't recorded live, the cover is me in a studio naked.
That's true. Yeah, I've seen it.
No, I do not imagine myself naked. I make myself naked. I'm fully clad at the time, but it's always my goal, my personal goal, is to expose more of myself, more of my flaw, more of my shame, more of my dark secrets, more of the demons that visit me in the night, all of whom have individual names, and when I can speak those fearlessly and as though it is effortless, as though it is shameless on stage, then I know I am as naked as I can get.
You know, that is the last thing I would ever want to do. This sounds absolutely terrifying to me.
It's only terrifying for the first 5 or 7 years that you do it.
And then it's smooth sailing after that, huh?
It's never smooth sailing. It's never smooth sailing. It's just less terrifying. Here there be monsters.
Yes. What a joy to hear someone talk about their feelings, their internal feelings about what they're doing and what they've experienced on stage, because, you know, we all get the front. We all get the CD or the DVD. We see what's being said. We hear, but we don't hear. I mean, like so many artists have such difficult lives in some ways, and so other artists have extremely difficult lives. I mean, Richard Pryor comes to mind. Richard Pryor, his father was a pimp and his mother was a prostitute, and it's not like he separated from that life. He grew up in a brothel, and to hear the facts of his life is completely, you know, different than what you hear in terms of, you know, the art and so forth. But it informs his art, obviously, and his live shows. It informed his live shows greatly, and it's it's just, that's the stuff, getting the true story from the artist. Dylan, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I hope you guys can make it out to the show. And and this has been a great joy.
It's been fascinating. Jim? Yes, Jackie?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention again the South Bay Story Show. It'll be Saturday, March 4th, and Sunday, March 5th at the Hermosa Beach Second Story Theater right there on Pier Avenue. And, Jim, how much are tickets?
$20.
$20?
Yes.
What is it, about a two-hour show?
Right. It's about 2 hours, maybe 90 minutes if it's really tight. I would encourage people to stick around afterwards, because you talk to the storytellers. Many of them have, in fact, I know Dylan has a lot of great CDs and books that people can buy. And so it really turns into a picnic.
Sounds like a fun night, Joe. Sounds like a fun night.
It does. Okay. It does.
Well, thank you so much for having us on, and it's great, Jackie, that you're running this, telling people all about the things that are happening in the South Bay. You know, I didn't know anything about the food swap. That sounds interesting. Can anybody just go and observe the exchanges and all the food and all that?
It makes me want to go in my kitchen and cook something. No, there's a lot of really super unique things happening, on the periphery. You know, there's a lot more stuff going on in places you might not expect it. I mentioned that I think this weekend there's another event, Underground Monologues Slam.
Mm.
And it's like each person gets up and can do a 2 minute monologue, you know. And that's part of the Sunscreen West Film Festival.
That's Robert Enrique is doing that.
Yes.
Yeah.
He does a fundraiser once a month, you know, for the film festival. And he's doing some really interesting and unique things. So, yeah, keep on getting the weekend guide and you'll know what's going on.
Yeah, I told he had a sonnet slam once, and I recited in hopefully a dramatic way Shakespeare's sonnet 147, I believe it was.
Wow.
I'm a big fan of Robert's.
Yeah, he's doing great stuff.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, thanks again.
Joe, we got to wrap it up.
We got to wrap it up. Jim Mueller, Dylan Brody, thank you so much. This was a really, really special show. We covered a lot of topics, and we got some supposedly George Carlin quotes in there. You can't get any better than that. Jim Mueller, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Joe and Jackie. Thanks a lot.
And we look forward to your world tour, Dylan. Barcelona, New York, Chicago? It sounds like
I'm
fun.
I'm calling it international because with three cities, it's a little goofy to call it a world tour.
Okay. Dylan Brody's DrivingHollywood.com.
Yes,
Dylan
I
Brody's
am, and yes,
with
it is.
Net. DrivingHollywood.com. And, of course, it's the Celtic spelling of Brody.
That's correct. Brody. Dylan. Brody.
Yes. Thank you very much. It's been fantastic. All right. That's our show, ladies and gentlemen. We hope to see you again tomorrow. And it's going to be a great live show at the Manhattan Beach Chamber with the new president and CEO of the Manhattan Beach Chamber, Mark Lips. And we're looking forward to that, aren't we, Jackie?
Oh, we certainly are.
All right. Thanks, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.